This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Kimberly Brummett, and on behalf of the Cops Office, I'd like to introduce you to Howard Spivak, Director of the Division of Violence Prevention in the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. Dr. Spivak is here to discuss with us the relationship between public health and violence prevention. You and many experts speak about a public health approach that can be used to prevent violence. Can you explain the benefits of this approach and how it can help law enforcement promote more meaningful and effective prevention?
Yes, you're actually asking me two questions, so I'm going to start with what the benefits of the approach is and then tie it into how it can help law enforcement promote more meaningful and effective prevention. First of all, public health is engaged in this issue of violence because of the huge burden that it takes on the health of individuals and populations in this country. Not only does it result in injury and death, but there's growing evidence that there are long-term consequences to exposure to and involvement with violence that actually, for younger children, can affect the development of their brains, and for people at any age, can increase their risk for chronic disease and chronic mental health problems. So the cost of this is enormous and goes well beyond the obvious costs of the acute effects of violence. The second thing is that there's a growing body of evidence that shows that violence is preventable, that violence doesn't need to happen and that can actually be prevented before it even starts. So as important as it is for us to respond to violence, it's equally important that we move as upstream on this as possible and do the kinds of things that actually reduce the presence of violence in people's lives and in communities, because we know that these exposures have such serious long-term consequences. The way public health approaches issues like violence is to, in fact, look for strategies that focus on prevention and early prevention as much as possible to avoid any consequences, short or long term, from these issues. And we go about it with several very conscious steps. One is that we collect a lot of information on issues like violence that not only help us to understand the magnitude of the problem, but also help us to better understand what the factors are that either increase risk or, in fact, provide protective elements that help people avoid violence or involvement with violence. The second thing is that we then develop programs and strategies that look at how we can modify those risks and, in fact, enhance the protective factors. And then we take that information and that understanding of the strategies that work and then work with health departments and other partners, including the criminal justice system, to put these strategies in place as large a scale as possible so that we can actually bring these efforts to a level that really make a difference, not, again, just for individuals, but for whole populations. And that's extremely important. Now, what public health can bring to and support the work of the criminal justice system and police is that we can bring this perspective of moving far upstream and dealing with these issues in as proactively a way as possible so that we don't focus resources just on the important response services, but we actually can begin to direct resources to the prevention end of the spectrum, which then ultimately saves both human costs as well as financial costs further down the road. And we have many examples of how this works with violence. We have a whole spectrum of programs that can be put in place in communities that help individuals and families to have healthier lifestyles and, in fact, reduce or eliminate violence from their lives. And these range from very early intervention programs like nurse home visiting programs around the birth of a new child to parenting support programs for parents of all types, but in particular parents who may be having difficulty with parenting, to programs that we can put into schools that help kids develop the skills to deal with conflict and anger in a more successful and pro-social way, to community-level strategies from street outreach to policy changes at a community level, all of which supplement, augment, and complement the work that the police are doing in dealing directly with violence and violent crime and working with the kids who are already engaged in this violent behavior and need more than just the early intervention and prevention services that I've talked about.
A 1979 Surgeon General report made one of the first explicit links between public health and law enforcement. It identified violent behavior and stress as significant risks to health across America's communities. 4 years later, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention established the Violence Epidemiology Branch, which later became the Division of Violence Prevention, to focus primarily on the public health approach to violence, preventing violence before it starts. Can you describe some of the key efforts and partnerships, besides what you've already mentioned, with law enforcement agencies this division has helped facilitate?
Yes, and I think this question does emphasize a point I've already made, which is always important to restate, and that is violence has consequences beyond its immediate, obvious effects, and that's why preventing it from happening in the first place is so important, because even if we intervene and eliminate the violence later on in the process, some of the long-term effects may happen anyway. And so preventing it in the first place becomes all the more important. And I'd like to give you a couple of examples of partnerships we've done with the criminal justice system and with the police, which I think have been extremely helpful and important. One is our work with the Department of Justice around the National Forum for Youth Violence Prevention, where many different disciplines and agencies have come together under this umbrella of the forum, where the Department of Justice is coordinating it and organizing it. And many of the resources were being directed towards responding to violence, re-entry programs, programs that worked with kids who were already in the juvenile justice system, all extremely important work. But the cities that were part of the forum were paying very little attention to early prevention. And our involvement in the forum has been to bring more attention to the early prevention of violence before it happens to complement all the other work. And I think our being there and working with the Justice Department and working with the criminal justice system as well as the other partners at the forum have really created a broader balance of the efforts of the forum, and I think will make the forum far more successful, because prevention is now becoming as an important and balanced a component of this work as the response and reentry and service elements have been. Now, on a more specific programmatic level, there are a number of cities where health departments have received funding through the CDC to develop youth violence prevention activities, and the core of their work involves building partnerships with other key players in communities, the police being one of those partners, but also other sectors, parks and recreation, community development of various sorts, because some of the work we've done has shown that, in fact, there are strategies involving green space development, there are strategies involving changes in the built environment and the physical environment around people that can greatly influence levels of violence in a community, which then makes the work of the police and the criminal justice system easier because there are fewer young people entering the flow into violent behavior. Another specific example is the way the data that we collect in public health can help supplement and augment the work of the police. One example is the use of emergency department data, which is a very sensitive source of information that gives real-time information on where hotspots are happening. Many more violent injuries present to the healthcare system than present to the police. And so use of emergency department data, along with the data that comes in through the more traditional police sources, gives a richer picture of what's going on at a community level, can better identify hotspots, can better direct services and concentrate services in important ways. And there have been some important lessons learned as a result of this. For example, some of the data that has come from emergency departments has shown us that there are certain places in communities where violence is more likely to happen. And one of those places is around stores that distribute single-serve alcoholic beverages. Often they're convenience stores selling very small bottles of alcohol or beer or wine in small bottles. And in fact, based on this information, we've also found that communities that have limited the sale of those kinds of alcoholic beverages in the single-dose containers has actually dramatically reduced the level of violent injuries that have occurred in those communities. The police data alone may not have picked all of that up because many of these injuries were being brought to emergency departments and were not necessarily being brought to police departments. So the linkage of this data becomes very important. And what it really teaches us is that we all have pieces of this puzzle, and the more we're capable of putting these pieces together, the better all of us can do our work. The last thing I want to say with respect to this is that we have a system called the National Violent Death Reporting System, which is a system that takes information from multiple sources, from death records, from coroner's offices, from police departments, links it together, and allows us to look at violent injuries in a much more comprehensive way so that we can put pieces together, better understand the circumstances of that violence, and where there may have been points of entry where the violence could have been prevented. It's taught us a great deal about the dynamics of domestic violence and intimate partner violence. It's taught us some of the elements related to youth violence. It's taught us a great deal about the dynamics and circumstances around suicides. And this information has allowed the development of programs and strategies at the state level and at the local level that have more effectively addressed these problems and reduced rates of violence, both self-inflicted violence as well as externally inflicted violence, again, augmenting and supplementing and complementing the work that the police are doing.
What role does the private sector play in the public health approach to violence prevention?
The private sector plays a very important role, and one of the things that we've learned in public health is that there are very few sectors that don't have a role in this. There are many departments in government, especially local government, that by the nature of the work they do are actually contributing to violence prevention without even realizing it. For example, the cleaning up of empty lots is very important because we know that the physical environment that people live in and function in affects their behavior, and that if a neighborhood looks better, the behavior of people in those communities changes along with the improvements in those communities. Now, with respect to the private sector, we know that there are a number of contributions that the private sector can make to this. One of the key elements is the development of business improvement districts. And we now have several studies that show us that when there are dollars invested in communities, even relatively poor communities, if there are dollars invested for business development and business improvement, that it has significant effects on rates of violent crime and violence in general, and not just street violence, but may in fact have effects even on violence in the context of people's homes, the more hidden violence that we often don't see as much of as is really there, and yet these are circumstances that then become risk factors for young people becoming involved with violence later in their lives. So investment in business development and economic development is one element of this. A second element of the private sector is the understanding that the physical and social environment that people live in is very important, and that investment in creating opportunities for building social networks in a community is very important. So the development of youth centers, the development of places where people can gather and develop social connections becomes very important, because people who are socially connected tend to be less violent than people who are more isolated and less involved in a community. And so these are just a few examples of how the private sector can be an important and key player in this work.
Much like law enforcement, public health policies and practices are often implemented at the local level. They take on a distinctive characteristics as they adapt to local circumstances, problems, and challenges. One size does not always fit all. Can you identify some of the more unique and successful local public health violence prevention strategies that are currently in operation?
Yes, and it's very important that strategies be appropriate for the communities that they're being put in. And there's really two elements in this. One is determining the readiness of a community for any given approach, either programmatic or policy level. Because if communities aren't ready for something, trying to fit them into those communities can often be frustrating and not terribly helpful. And then the second element of this is that communities need to have a sense of ownership of what's going on in their communities. So programs not only need to look and be designed appropriately for a community, but they often need to be modified with community input itself, so that there's not only ownership of it, but there's a sense of participation in that. And there are a number of strategies that have been used. For example, in Denver, where we fund a youth violence prevention center at the University of Colorado, they've been implementing and evaluating a strategy called the Communities of Care model, which is in many ways essentially a community organizing model where the community is engaged in a process, where information is shared at a community level so that there's an increased understanding of the problem. And the community then becomes an active participant in the actual design and development and decision making over what the best strategies are that fit the community. And there is increasing evidence that the engagement of communities in this way can play an important role in the success of programs. I would also add that this becomes a great opportunity for police and other members of the criminal justice system to become part of a process. And I know that there are many police departments that have, in fact, become involved in much more actively in engaging communities in the work they're doing. I think what public health brings is yet another way of entering a community and working with the community and bringing in all of the key stakeholders, the police being one of those key stakeholders, but community leadership and community representatives as well. So community of care is a great model. Another extremely good model has been one that grows out of something I mentioned earlier, which is the understanding of the role that alcohol plays in this. And there's a very good example in Richmond, Virginia, where we also fund a youth violence prevention center, where the information about where violent injuries were occurring and their relationship to vendors who were distributing these single serve alcoholic beverages, that there was that association. The community then took that information and they initiated community action to change rules around the sale of alcoholic beverages. So the information that was provided to the community allowed the community, empowered the community to take a successful action in creating change that then made their community safer. And there are many examples of this around street outreach, around concentrating of services, around engaging and integrating public service and community service into these initiatives that have all been either successful in advancing the work of violence prevention or are showing extreme promise in this work.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Dr. Spivak, for all this important information and for your time and expertise today.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice COPS Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.
The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.